There we go, there we go.
Yeah.
I'm so proud to be here on Texas Independence Day. Thank you. I'm proud to be here with all of you in this fight. Thank you.
Okay, you're listening to Scrambled Eggs with Melody. I'm sitting in here for Jane this morning. She's been kind enough to let me do a live interview with a very special guest, Catherine Albrecht. And you're listening here on KHEN LPFM Radio 106.9, Salida, Colorado. And I want to say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and are my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And Jane will be coming up shortly after the program with her normally scheduled program, Americana. So I is to introduce Catherine Albrecht. She's a popular media commentator, a dynamic radio personality, an author and co-author of 6 books and videos, a highly effective privacy campaigner, a sought-after public speaker and privacy expert, and conversant in a wide variety of topics, but her passion is in RFID, real ID, human microchip implants, government surveillance, encroachment on freedom, animal and food tracking, and retail data collection. More importantly, Catherine uses her unique worldview drawn from philosophy and history to explain why these issues matter. She urges audiences to take a stand for what's right in historical crossroads between freedom and control. Catherine, are you there?
I sure am, Melody. It's great to be on your radio program.
Well, great. And I'm going to let you just kind of go for it, because I know there's one thing that you can do. You can talk about this subject.
Boy, that's for sure. You know, I do a daily 2-hour radio program, so I talk about the show, this topic, and related topics, liberty and freedom issues and the encroachment of Big Brother, for, 10 hours every single week, Monday through Friday. So certainly there's a lot going on. The big news this week, though, Melody, is we just issued a press release announcing a brand-new website that we've launched called ChipMeNot.com, and it has to do with the implantable microchips and animals. So when I say animals, I'm talking dogs and cats that have been outfitted or injected or implanted with these microchip devices marketed by the Home Again company. Home Again is a company that has aggressively promoted its products to veterinarians and animal shelters and humane societies and the like all around the country and, in fact, all around the globe. And to date, we've got several million animals, we believe now worldwide, have been implanted with the Home Again microchip. But what they don't tell you when you go into the vet to get that microchip implanted is those devices actually cause cancer in between 1 in 10% of laboratory animals, and now there's a growing number of cancers being caused in dogs, 2 of them written up in the veterinary literature, and then several more that we've featured on our website at ChipMeNot. So what we've done is we've put together a website that focuses specifically on RFID microchip, implantable microchip-induced tumors and other side effects and negative reactions in animals. And that is at ChipMeNot.com. So if anyone out there is listening and has had a negative reaction, whether it's an infection, an abscess, sometimes these microchips will push their way back out of the body, which makes sense. It's a foreign object in the animal's body that it doesn't want there, so it'll try to remove it. Cancer, tumors, all sorts of problems. We have one example or one case of a dog who actually bled to death after being injected with the microchip and died in his owner's arms a couple of hours after the injection procedure. So all of those adverse reactions are what they're called in the literature, and we've posted them all on our new website at shipmenot.com. And now, Melody, the exciting news is that after spending 3 to 4 years trying to inform the public about this issue and let people know that there is a potential risk of cancer around these chips and that they need to be checking the chips for lumps or cancer, there's actually a woman by the name of Andrea Rutherford, whose cat developed cancer back in 2007 around a microchip, who last week filed suit in Cambridge, Massachusetts, in district court against Merck, which is the parent company of Home Again, stating that her cat developed cancer around a microchip. It was an aggressive fibrosarcoma. He had to undergo surgery and radiation and chemotherapy in order to survive that ordeal. He did survive, and now his owner is suing Merck for reasonable expenses as well as interest on the money that she spent, probably around $10,000. In addition, she's suing Digital Angel Corporation, which is the company that makes the implantable microchips or outsources them to be made. So we've got our first actual lawsuit against the use of implantable microchips. And what she is claiming is that, first of all, the microchip caused the cancer and therefore was not merchantable or fit for the purpose it was being sold for, but also that Home Again, the veterinarian, and Merck should have all advised her of the very real possibility that the implanted microchip could cause cancer. Now, we think it's a rare number of cases. It's probably less than 1%, probably far less than 1%, but it's still not an insubstantial issue, and if pet owners were aware of it, some may choose simply not to have the procedure and instead to use a sturdy collar and a tag. So that's what the lawsuit is all about, and we are looking forward to seeing the outcome.
When you talk of Merck, are you talking, how do you spell that?
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing you a little bit, Melody.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you can boost your volume to me, but how do you, how do you spell Merck?
Yes.
Merck is the giant pharmaceutical corporation, and they're spelled M-E-R-C-K. And the background on Merck is that Merck purchased or merged with a company called Shearing Plow, which is also a big pharmaceutical company. Shearing Plow owned Home Again, and when Merck merged with Shearing Plow last year, they actually acquired not only all of the assets of Shearing Plow and Home Again, but they also acquired, I guess, the legal liabilities of those companies as well, and that's why they're in the process of being sued now.
Now, are they related to Verichip?
Well, now, the Verichip Corporation is the co-defendant. The company that's related to them is the Digital Angel Corporation. And so the background on the Verichip, that's the human implant. I should point out that human implants and animal implants are the same technology. You can see pictures of them up on our website at shipmenot.com. If you click on, what is it under? I think it's under microchip risks. You can actually see a picture of the animal chip and the chip that's been marketed for human beings known as the Verichip. And the Home Again chip and the Verichip are identical. The only thing different about them is that the microchip contained in them transmits a 16-digit ID code for humans and a 10-digit ID code for animals. But other than that, they're identical. They're a capsule of medical-grade glass. Inside of the capsule, there's a tiny microchip with encoded with a number. It has an antenna made of copper wire wrapped around the microchip inside of the glass. The glass is then coated about half to a third of the glass is coated in a polypropylene plastic substance called BioBond, and that is designed to keep these devices from migrating inside the body, because one of the very real problems with implantable, you know, anytime you implant something into a body, if it's a slippery piece of glass, it's likely to slide around inside the body. There have been cases that I recall reading where a horse was implanted with a device like that in the neck, and it migrated all the way down to its organs. So these things can tunnel right through the flesh. So that's why they mount them with this plastic substance called BioBond. BioBond is a porous coating. And so when these devices go into the body, and this is kind of helpful in understanding how the cancers form as well, when these devices are placed into the body wants to reject them. You know, if you get a splinter, if you get a piece of shrapnel in a war, if you get a piece of glass embedded in your body will create an inflammatory reaction. It'll make a little inflammation. It'll surround the foreign object with pus, And then it will try to create an opening through the flesh to pop it back out again. That's how, you know, I was just picking ticks off of my dog today. It was horrifying. And one of the ticks, its head is still inside of my dog. So what my dog's body will now do, I can't get it out. So what the body will now do, because there's a foreign object in there that doesn't belong there, is his body will now create an inflammation, a little irritation, an inflamed area around there, and it will push, hopefully, the disgusting head of a tick that's inside of his body back out again. Well, the thing that happens with the microchip, though, is they embed it too deep in the flesh for it to come back out. So it goes, you know, deep under the subcutaneous layer. So the inflammation process occurs, but the popping of the thing back out again does not occur, except in some cases. So that inflammation process, the body, if it cannot push it back out, it tries to create a little capsule, a little tissue to sort of protect the rest of the body from it, because your body doesn't know what this thing is. It says, you know, this could be, you know, a rusty nail that could let out, you know, give off oxidation and rust into the body and cause further harm. This thing could be, you know, it could be anything. So the body tries to wall it off and creates a little capsule of tissue around it. And when you've got that biobond, that plastic substance, that tissue of that capsule of tissue interweaves into the holes in the biobond, thus creating sort of a firm connection. The problem, apparently, according to all the animal studies that we've reviewed, and there's a substantial amount of scientific literature on this, showing that these microchips have caused cancer in laboratory animals, that capsule of tissue around the microchip is the place where the cancer starts, because sometimes that inflammatory process and the creation of that little capsule goes wrong. We don't know if it's because of something in the plastic substance or if it's something having to do with the glass in the body, if it's having to do with the electromagnetic radiation that these microchips pick up and amplify inside of the body. There's a lot of questions, and we don't know the answer to those yet. But what we do know is that when scientists look at these capsules under, you know, these cancers under the microscope, they find that the cancer started in the little area around the microchip directly. So when they remove these cancers, in some cases in the mice and rats, the cancers are so big they become bigger than the animal itself. And when they remove them and they cut them open, it's almost like you know, cutting open a plum, and right there in the middle there's the seed. Well, right in the middle of each of these cancers, there's the microchip, making it very clear that they were the cause of these cancers. So in the case of Bulkin, that's the name of the cat involved in this lawsuit, Bulkin had one of these tumors on his back, the scruff of his neck in between his shoulder blades, which is where they put the microchip. And again, when they cut it open, the microchip was inside of there. The oncologist and the veterinarian both said that it was likely caused by the microchip, so it was pretty clear in their medical reports what was going on. And that is also the case in the other animals that we've seen, that either the microchip is attached to the tumor or it's literally right in the center of the tumor. So it's a big problem, and I'm cautioning people who are listening to at least do some research and know your facts before you consider getting one of these microchips placed into an animal.
Okay, I'm talking to Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and while I'm and we're talking on radio frequency ID, and these are implantable chips. Now, I find it interesting that these pharmaceutical companies are the ones involved in this process. Do you have an idea why? And before, and I also would like you to tell us about what your doctorate of in your training.
Yeah, I've got a background in consumer education.
Okay.
I've been a consumer privacy advocate since 1999, so I'm coming up on 11 years now of doing consumer advocacy. I have fought back against pretty much anything that invades customer privacy, creates databases, or requires their personal information or uses it in inappropriate ways. And I got involved in the whole RFID issue, the radio frequency microchip issue, back in 2002 and 2003. I'm the author of a best-selling book on RFID called Spy Chips, How Major Corporations and Governments Plan to Track Your Every Move with RFID. That book came out in 2005 and 2006. It was published by Penguin, and it has been a bestseller, as people, I think, just now are beginning to realize that the things we wrote about in the book back in 2006 are actually all coming true today. So my background is I've got a doctorate from Harvard University in human development and psychology. My research focus was on consumer education issues, asking questions about how much people understand when they give away data about themselves and how how aware they are of the different ways that corporations and companies collect their personal information. And what I found was that they're, as not surprisingly, they're dismally unaware of how that information gets collected.
Okay, and so as far as the pharmaceutical companies being involved with these checks.
Yeah, let me tackle that. Great question. These companies sell not only human health products, but they also sell animal health products. When you go into your veterinarian and your vet does a rabies shot or a distemper vaccine or provides your dog with a prescription for some pill medication that your animal has to take, those medical products are produced by the big pharmaceutical companies. So those pharmaceutical companies have a relationship with veterinary clinics across the country and around the world. So it's a natural connection that they would also be the ones providing or supplying the implantable microchips in that same context. You've already got the veterinarian with the training to give an injection. You've already got sort of a natural place for that kind of an injection to take place. And that's why the pharmaceutical companies have seen this as a real profit center. We're hoping that with the lawsuit and other similar lawsuits that it will be less of a profit center for them and hopefully become an area of liability for them, because the folks whose animals have died, I mean, they're absolutely beside themselves. It's horrible to listen to them. You can go to chipmenot.com, and right there on the home page, you can watch a little slideshow of the animals themselves, and people's beautiful pets, dogs, cats. You've also got laboratory animals, mice and rats. You've even got some exotic animals like Damaraland mole rats and Egyptian fruit bats and other animals that have also developed cancer around these microchips. So all of that information is available at chipmenot.com. Antichips.com is our human chipping website. But we've got all the medical information, we've got the research studies, we've got the scientific documentation, and the case is pretty cut and dried. It's a very, very clear case that these chips are causing cancer in a small number of animals.
Now, they're starting out in animals, but they've also been putting these in humans, correct?
I'm sorry?
They started out with animals, but they're putting these in humans too, correct?
Well, you know, they were for a period of time, and then when we worked to get the study out about the animal cancers, they really changed their tune. Let me give you a little bit of background on that. The Verichip Corporation is a spin-off from the Digital Angel Corporation, and Digital Angel is the company that makes these microchips for home again. They're also named in this lawsuit as a defendant. Digital Angel originally was making implants that they were marketing both for people and for animals. And then they spun off a sub-corporation, which eventually came to be known as the Verichip Corporation. It's now called the Positive ID Corporation. At one time, it was called Applied Digital Solutions. It's had a ton of different names, but it's still the same company. And I'm just going to refer to them as Verichip. Now, Verichip took the animal tagging technology that HomeAgain was using and essentially started marketing it for human use. As I said, they're the same chip. So they were, in 2007, which is kind of a pivotal year for reasons I'll explain in a second. In 2007, the Verichip Corporation had made arrangements with Blue Cross Blue Shield to run a trial in which they were injecting these things into patients at the Hackensack, New Jersey Medical Center to see if they were useful in managing their electronic medical records. So the idea was that you would have this microchip injected into the skin of your triceps area, that's the upper part of your arm. The injection, they would put the same dog chip into people. And the chip could be read by running a scanner over it. So when there's a misconception about these microchips that they can be used to track cats or track people or locate people at a distance like GPS, but that's not how they work. They've only got about a 3-inch read range, and you have to hold the reader device literally 3 inches away from the chipped body part, 3 inches away from your arm, for example, to read the chip. And even then, all you get back is a 16-digit ID number, which then someone has to manually enter into a computer database on the Internet to connect to that person's medical records. So it's not, even from a health perspective, it's probably not your smartest way to transmit your health information, because if the Internet goes down, then you're out of luck. I think the Medic Alert bracelet is a far better you know, if you've got a deadly allergy to penicillin, if you've got diabetes, if you have something else that you need to alert a medical responder to, if you're ever unconscious, which is how they were marketing this microchip, rather than have somebody have to, you know, poke around your body and try to find a microchip and then log on to a website and then enter in a 16-digit ID number, can you imagine the likelihood of getting that right in an emergency situation? Then you'd have to wait for the Internet, and the Internet sometimes is slow and sometimes it's down altogether, to transmit that person's medical information. Wouldn't it be easier if you've got an unconscious patient in front of you, if you're an ambulance driver or a paramedic, to simply look at their wrist, see that they have a medical alert bracelet, flip it over and see penicillin allergy and diabetes? So, you know, even the medical model for the implant was actually pretty poorly thought out, and we thought it was a terrible idea. Oh, and then there's another irony, too. They also said in their literature, in the fine print, it said these devices may not work in areas like ambulances where there's a lot of ambient electromagnetic energy that could interfere with the signal that would need to happen between the chip and the reader. So what they were really saying is, you know, this thing may not even work in an ambulance. You know, you could be in an ambulance relying on this to save your life, and it may not even work. And the hilarious part is they said, in those cases, we recommend that the medical responders remove the patient from the ambulance, take them at a certain distance, and then try to read the chip. And I'm thinking, hang on a second, I live in New Hampshire where, you know, in the wintertime, we've got 3 feet of snow outside. And it was so ludicrous to think that you would be trying to read somebody's microchip in an ambulance and then pull over by the side of the road, carry this person in a stretcher in the freezing cold, you know, 20 feet away from the ambulance, and then try to read their microchip and then try to get, you know, take that 16-digit number and somehow punch it into a computer connection in a moving ambulance. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. It was completely insane. So, but that didn't stop Blue Cross Blue Shield from trying to do this. That didn't stop the trial that was also going forward at a place called the Alzheimer's Community Care Center in West Palm Beach, Florida. And in that location, they had actually gotten over 200 Alzheimer's patients and their caregivers to be implanted with these microchips. So, yes, to answer your question, in 2007, this stuff was going very strong. They'd been featured on the Today Show and on Good Morning America. There was a chipping procedure that actually took place on live television, you know, where you actually had the Jacobs family receiving their implants on TV. You had the stock was trading at it was somewhere between $11 and $13 a share, so it was doing extremely well. And then all of a sudden, the bottom fell out of the whole thing when the article published by the Associated Press came out. And I had worked with reporter Todd Lewin for 6 months to get him the information about the cancers in the laboratory animals. And when that story broke and it was picked up all over, you know, all over the world, that really destroyed the Verichip Corporation. Their stock went from like $13 a share to like 30 cents a share. They were threatened with being delisted from the stock exchange and becoming, you know, one of those pink sheet stocks that gets advertised on the internet through spam. They all of the trials that were underway with the microchips got canceled. People were getting their microchips removed. The Blue Cross Blue Shield trial was canceled. The Alzheimer's Community Care Center trial was canceled. All of this stuff went away as soon as that article came out. And the most recent good news is here in 2010, we've actually, there have been a couple of reporters who've contacted Verichip to ask them various questions, and Verichip has apparently told them that they're no longer marketing the Verichip for human implantation. So there is no longer, they were the only FDA-approved company doing this. They were the only company on the globe that was actively marketing an implantable RFID microchip. And if they're no longer offering it, then that means that nobody is offering or, should I say, threatening to implant people with microchips. So I think it's great news.
Okay, now, the one thing that I have to wonder, since it didn't really go away totally and they're still utilizing it in animals, do you think possibly that they're just hanging back and doing more research on it and have some other idea? I mean, because if these aren't performing in the way that they were purported to be, there's got to be something more, something they've got behind, you know, behind the scenes that we're maybe not aware of, and or maybe you are aware of.
Well, here's what I think. The government and the folks who benefit from tracking people would very much love to be able to GPS track human beings. The implantable microchip in its current form is useless for that. It would not help you track people because, like I said, it's only got a couple of inches of read range. So the only purpose that an implantable microchip would actually serve with current technology would be, for example, if you had a large number of people and you wanted the microchip to be able to quickly identify them. You know, when you're checking out at Walmart, one of my least favorite stores, I boycott Walmart because of their involvement with RFID, but when you're checking out of Walmart, it used to take time for the cashier to have to hunt around on the product, look for the price tag, and then key it in manually into the cash register, as those of us who are old enough to remember those days can attest. Then the barcode came out, and it made it really quick. You just go beep, 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 beep. All right, I just did five things right there. Boom, instantly. So that's what the microchip implant in humans would be useful for. If you had a detention center, if you had a prison, if you had a population of people under quarantine for flu or plague or something, then the microchip would enable you to quickly just say, you know what, hold out your, it'll probably be your hand because it's kind of hard to read everybody's upper arm. Hold out your hand, beep, 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 good, I just identified, you know, 20 people. So in that sense, it would be useful for quick identification of people when you're standing right in front of them. But it would be useless for identifying, you know, anybody at a distance. So what I think is likely to happen, you know, down the road, if you kind of want to get conspiratorial and concerned about where the future is going to go, I think at some point they will develop a tracking implant that will be capable of functioning like a GPS. So I say, gee, where's Catherine Albrecht? You know, I would never take one. I'd probably die before I would take a microchip implant. But, you know, where's Joe Schmo? And then they can just punch up the map and figure out Joe Schmo's exact location, just like you can now do with GPS. There's a lot of impediments to doing that in the human body right now. So that technology does not yet exist, and it would require massively invasive surgery to do it. But I do think that down the road that that's probably where the technology is going to go, is to find a way to make it easy enough to put into people and inexpensive enough and effective in that way. So I think that probably is going to come, but probably not for many years.
Okay, I want to say this is KHEN LPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, and this is Scrambled Eggs, and this is Melody filling in for Jane, who's coming up next with her regularly scheduled program, Americana. And my special guest this morning is Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and we're talking about radio frequency ID. And you have you get out there on the road and you really get out there and try to educate people on this particular subject because, I mean, there's a passion there like I can't believe. And does it tie into any other issues, or is it just pretty much you keep it in that arena?
Well, you know, I've been working on privacy issues across the board, but most of my work has involved the RFID tag, whether it's in driver's licenses. I wrote an article for Scientific American talking about these new enhanced driver's licenses that they're issuing in border states that enable people to be tracked at a distance of 30 to 60 feet away right through their wallets. So that's a terrible idea. They're doing that in Washington, Michigan, New York, and Arizona right now. So I certainly have been speaking out against that. I've been working on the other big issue that I've been working on is Google collecting everybody's personal information. And I am the U.S. spokesperson for a wonderful, wonderful company called StartPage, StartPage, StartPage.com. And StartPage is the private search engine alternative to Google. So I've been explaining to people that, you know, doing lots of talks and radio appearances, talking about how Google is recording all of our searches and putting them in a giant database. And Google has actually quietly amassed the largest database of personal information collected on people in the history of civilization. If you wanted to know information about, you know, name your person, rather than go to the IRS or the FBI or the CIA, you would go directly to Google because Google has been storing and recording every single search that that person has made. And your searches would reveal, you know, your medical conditions, what restaurant you had dinner at last Friday night, because people don't get out the phone book anymore. They just go on Google for the phone number to make a reservation. It would reveal whether you've been looking for a marriage counselor, whether you've been looking up foreclosure information or unemployment benefits or, you know, maybe your employer's leave of absence things. And, in fact, Google first came to my attention doing this a couple years ago because they were boasting that they could tell when people had the flu based on the searches. You know, if you went onto Google and you looked up, you know, chicken soup and Robitussin and, you know, my company's sick leave policy, then they'd go, aha, here's a person with the flu. We got a live one. And then what Google was doing is once they found out that you had the flu, based on your searches, they would pinpoint your location on a map and put a little red dot. And then they took all those red dots and they turned it over to the Centers for Disease Control. And that scared the bejeebers out of me because I said, my gosh, if the Centers for Disease Control, you know, if we were worried about that flu epidemic a while back, the swine flu, if that had become a real epidemic and there were some kind of a call for all Americans with the flu to be quarantined, then you could be doing a search on Google one night and the next day you could get a knock on your door and there could be a guy in a white lab coat with a syringe in his hand accompanied by, you know, three uniformed police officers saying, you know, step out of the house, ma'am, we have reason to believe someone in this home has flu. So that's the kind of thing, when I'm looking at that and I'm saying, my gosh, they're watching us. Google is not, you know, searching on the Internet is not like going in your room and closing the door where nobody can see. It's worse. You know, I think about all the searches that I do and I think, gosh, if people were standing behind me, would I actually do those same searches? Would I want people to know everything that's on my mind? Well, no. You know, that's why we have privacy. We close the door. And it doesn't mean I'm doing anything wrong. It just means it's nobody's business. But Google is watching and they're recording. So that's why I've been promoting startpage.com because they are third-party certified not to record any information. They don't know what you search for. They don't record your IP address. They don't use tracking cookies. And, in fact, they don't even know who's used them. So even if they got a subpoena or a warrant or some hacker got into their system, there'd be nothing to get because they don't store any data on their users. So it's a great, great company. I work for them. I love them. I've been working for them for close to 2 years now, and I can't say enough good about startpage.com. And anybody who cares about liberty or privacy or the future of our country needs to get off of Google immediately and make a switch. So I'm really asking people to switch over to Startpage.
Now you have a radio program, but is it on more than one network, or is it primarily just on?
Yeah, I'm on 16 or 17 stations nationwide at this point. My program broadcasts. Probably the easiest way to get it would just be to go to my website, KatherineAlbrecht.com, and listen to it streaming through the computer. And if you go there, KatherineAlbrecht.com, click on Radio Show, and then you can pull down the menu there and then click the Listen Live button, and it'll stream right through your computer speakers. And if people want to catch it now, you can listen to my last program by dialing this number if people want to take down a phone number. It's a two-hour repeat, so it loops every 2 hours, 24 hours, and it gets replaced with the newest show every day when I do a new show. But that number is 760-569-7703. And if you dial that number, you will be connected. Literally, it won't even ring. It'll just go bleep, and you'll be listening to my show. So 760-569-7703. If you just want to, you know, give it a five-minute listen and see what you think.
So you take on a lot of issues that have to do with liberty and freedom. And I know you also are a very spiritual person as well. Now, when it comes to... You were speaking a little bit about the incident that took place this week when I was listening to your program on the baby that was that they had taken from the parents. Am I correct?
Yeah, that happened right here in New Hampshire. Actually, the Jonathan Irish and his wife, or the mother of his child, had their baby taken away. The good news today is that apparently, as of yesterday, the baby has now been reunited with the parents. And I think that was a result of a huge amount of media attention and public response. So that's the kind of thing that I believe is the only thing standing between us and tyranny, is our ability to come out in large numbers and use the new media to communicate with each other and sort of bring attention to these issues. So, yes, that happened right here in New Hampshire. The baby was taken away. Now they're claiming, apparently, and I don't have all the details, but they're claiming that there was a mistaken identity, that the baby was taken away, that there was someone else by the name of the father that has a domestic violence history, and it wasn't that guy. I don't know what all the story is, but we are glad that after lots and lots of media attention, that baby is going home.
Well, that's pretty spooky when it's just a case of mistaken identity. That could happen to any of us.
Exactly. You know, to be honest with you, I'm a little bit skeptical. I actually think that they did think that they had the right person, but that they're trying to find a way to save face and return the baby and just make all the media attention and all the public outcry go away. So that's my secret suspicion. I may be wrong. It may actually have been a case of mistaken identity, but that certainly sounds like a convenient way to kind of say, okay, you can have your baby back, and it was a different guy, so just take the baby and leave us alone. Because I think that's what's happening. There's been such a massive nationwide outcry over this baby case that I'm thrilled that we're able to make that kind of have that kind of an impact on the people doing these things. So that's good news.
And was that their only child?
Well, it was. The mother, Stephanie, I want to say Taylor, I'm not remembering her last name right off the bat, but she has a number of other children, and according to the complaint that was filed with from the Department of Children's Services, she, according to the original complaint, that there was some concern that the father of this baby had posed a threat to the other children and had been involved in domestic violence with her. And so that's why they said, all right, well, if you have another baby and you're going to not keep this guy away from your children, then we're going to have to just take the baby away from you. So those were the claims. He denied it from the very beginning and said, that's absolutely not true. I don't even know what they're talking about. Now the government itself is saying, the government of New Hampshire and Children's Services are saying, yeah, we made a mistake. It was a different guy. We don't have anything on this guy. You can have the baby back. So those were the claims. It's kind of it sounds like sort of a messy situation because she actually is married to someone else. They've been separated for 2 years. She claims to have been filing divorce papers and he won't sign them. And the children are the children of this other father. Now she's got a new boyfriend who's this Jonathan Irish, and they have this new baby that got taken away. So it sounds like, I think we really need to be praying for the couple and for the family, because I think they are in difficult circumstances, even, you know, not even counting having their baby taken away. It just sounds like their lives are a little bit turbulent. So I think any prayers we can send their way and send for this little baby, baby Cheyenne, that those prayers would go straight to the ear of God. And speaking about spiritual issues, I am a born-again, Bible-believing Christian. I absolutely believe that we are coming into many of the times that have been prophesied in the book of Revelation, and I believe that the implantable microchip could well be a precursor to the actual mark of the beast that's described in the book of Revelation, because, you know, the Bible talks about a time you won't be able to buy or sell without a number. Well, we're almost there. All they have to do is eliminate cash, and we won't be able to buy or sell without a number. That'll be it. And then the Bible also talks about, during that time, that you will have to have a mark in your right hand or your forehead. And if you don't have that mark and worship the beast, which is a world leader, a global leader that's evil, that you won't be able to buy or sell at all. And the microchip, it's interesting, the microchip can actually be used as a payment device. If you were to implant a microchip into someone's hand, then that microchip could transmit its unique ID number and actually be used for payment purposes. And what people don't understand right now is that quietly, over the last 3 years, all across the country and all around the globe, RFID payment device readers have been installed at cash registers. And most people don't even notice this because it's the tap-and-go or wave-and-go RFID reader that connects with your credit card. So if you've got a credit card that says PayPass or has a little RFID symbol on it, your credit card is transmitting an ID number through radio waves just like a microchip implant in your hand would do. And waving the credit card over that reader is just one step away from waving your hand over the reader. And it's essentially the exact same technology that's inside the credit card as is inside of the implantable microchip. You know, it's just got a couple of small differences, and that those could be easily smoothed over. So you actually could take a credit card RFID chip that's in credit cards, millions of them today, like I said, issued over the last 3 years, implanted in a person's hand, and that person could make payments at today's cash registers, not the future, but right now, 2010, the cash registers that exist today.
So how far off from the credit card is that readable? How far away from the credit card is that readable by these readers?
Pretty close. I mean, you've got to get it right up on it. It's like less than an inch.
Okay.
So you're not going to be... Now, you can build a reader device that can read these credit cards through people's wallets. And in fact, researchers at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst did just that. They took these RFID credit cards and proved that they could read them using off-the-shelf reader technology, and they could get people's full credit card numbers and their expiration dates and their names and their everything else right through somebody's wallet or pocket as they're walking down the street. So that's certainly possible, but the reader devices in the stores have been calibrated so that they have a short read range of just about an inch.
Now, you do seminars, and are you have anything coming up that you're working with, like with other people that have passionate issues, or are you doing this on your own, or do you...
Well, we've got an 18,000-member mailing list and people who have joined our organization, Caspian. We've got a team of people working on the animal chipping, our brand-new animal chipping website at chipmenot.com. I'm giving a speech this weekend here in New Hampshire. I'm giving another one next week in West Virginia. I'm giving another one like 2 or 3 weeks after that to the Bar Association of New York in New York City. So I travel frequently. I do a lot of speaking. If people in your listening area are interested in having me speak, we could certainly discuss that, because I'd love to get out there and talk to folks in your area as well. But, yeah, so there's a lot going on. My latest project is most of my energy probably these days goes into my radio program, and that's at katherinealbrecht.com, and also doing a lot of a brand new project of radio vignettes, which are little 90-second radio spots. Who knows, maybe we can get them aired on your program. They come out every single day, and those radio spots highlight a privacy issue or a health issue or some other way that you can kind of take some positive information and use it.
Okay.
And those are free, by the way, to radio stations. So if your station is in any way interested, you can just drop me a line, kma@spychips.com, and I'll let you know how you can get a hold of those. And they come out Monday through Friday, 90-second professionally produced radio spot every day with kind of a, sort of like a little mini privacy magazine or a little mini consumer corner of what kinds of things people should be paying attention to.
Great. Now, I did get to see you speak in Denver at, I think it was a Faith and Liberty.
Yes, that was a wonderful, wonderful conference. That was an extraordinary conference where we were talking about money. Had so many people discussing the issue of money there in Denver and how it ties in with prophecy and how it ties in with faith and how it ties in with our freedom. It was a terrific event.
Okay, and again, I'm speaking with Dr. Katherine Albrecht, and we have been on the subject of tracking and radio frequency ID. I'm having a terrible time with that word this morning. Is there anything else that you would like to get into a little bit further on this radio?
No, I think that's it, and I think originally we'd scheduled this for a half an hour, if I'm not mistaken, because I've got another radio interview coming up here very shortly, so I'm probably going to need to sign off, but I would encourage people to check out our website at chipmenot.com and our information at, we've got a bunch of websites. KatherineAlbrecht.com is the radio show. Chipmenot.com is the brand new adverse reaction registry for microchips in animals. Antichips.com, I know this is a lot of stuff to remember, but antichips.com is our website dealing with human microchip implants and all those trials that I was talking about. We did a big protest at the Alzheimer's Center that I mentioned. We've got all the pictures there at antichips.com. And spychips.com if you're interested in more information about our best-selling book. And if you go to katherinealbrecht.com and you'd like to support our work, we've actually got signed copies available of my new DVD called Shadow Government, which deals with all these technologies and kind of ties it all together with a nice bow at the end. And it's a great way to introduce this topic to someone else who thinks you're paranoid or doesn't understand, because we've got all the documentation and all the experts there from Harvard and elsewhere who really make a very solid case that we're heading towards global tyranny if we don't turn the tide.
Well, again, Katherine, I want to thank you for coming on our program this morning, and good luck, and may everybody continue to get this information out to the public, and thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Melody, so much, and thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to talk to your audience there, and let me send out many, many blessings to your radio career and also to all of the people listening to the program. God bless you all, and you can reach me at kma@spychips.com or katherinealbrecht.com. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.